when I looked at these readings last week, I was flummoxed in an unusual way. There is kind of a plethora of richness here on these three readings, where sometimes I feel like I have to struggle to make any sense out of what we're given. But today, there's almost too much. So I will try to see how these readings, first of all, fit together, and I hope illumine what is this richness. This passage that Ian read so well from 1 Corinthians is very familiar to everybody. I mean, I've had scores of weddings where everybody, you know, says, oh, love is patient, love is kind. And everybody goes around with a happy face and say, oh, this is nice. We're celebrating love today. Well, yeah, I'm not against that, but the problem is that there can be a real, and often is, a serious misconstruction about what Paul is trying to say here. And the context is useful. The Corinthians were crazy, in a sense. He had more trouble with them than he had with any of the congregations he founded, because they were, as one writer put it, capable of every conceivable misunderstanding of what he said to them that was possible. And the issue here had to do with the gift of tongues. Now, I don't understand the gift of tongues. Paul himself said he had it. And some of the Corinthians did too, whatever it was. But the problem was that they used it to one-up everybody else. I can speak in tongues and you can't. So they were able to use religion in a competitive way. And that's precisely why Paul starts this glorious rhapsodic passage with saying, if I spoke with the tongues of mortals and of angels. In other words, he was trying to indicate that unless these gifts, which he's been talking about in the readings we've heard the last few Sundays, unless these gifts are seen as part of our connectedness with each other and for each other, then they are, as he says here, noisy gong or clanging cymbals and useless. Not only useless, but positively harmful. So what is he counterpoising with? Well, it sounds like, you know, love's patient, love's kind, and all that nice stuff. But the issue, which comes up in a variety of ways, is this childish sort of self-promotion that some of the Corinthians have. That's why he talked about when I was a child, you know, I showed off, basically. A human tendency, I think, that dies very slowly in any of us, if it dies ever. Love for Paul is not some kind of one-on-one romantic idyll as we have here, falling in love with love, you know. Only a North American could have written a song with that title, I think. We love love. Until we begin to see, as Paul did, its true costliness. Love means that I simply open myself to everybody, not just some special partner. Love means radical availability to everybody, and to the extent that it's not that, it's not real. It's just not real. And this, I think, is very hard to do. I mean, most of us are so needy and so hungry for any, even the most meager forms of love, that we grab on and hold with massive strength whatever signs of love or affection we get in our lives. And okay, that's certainly understandable. But we have to distinguish that from the kind of love that Paul is talking about. We can come at it in a slightly different way. The whole notion of God and praying to God. Oh, God, well, save me from, you know, cancer or car wrecks or dead friends or dogs or whatever. You know. God will somehow comfort me. It is extraordinarily important to know that the love of God is not some kind of Tylenol that's going to barricade all the normal evils of life. Rather, what the love of God means is that precisely in the process of trying to open myself to everybody, God fortifies me, because that's going to cost big time. That's where the comfort of God lies. Not just because everybody has catastrophes in their lives. Everybody has catastrophes. Is the God of Jeremiah, Paul, Jesus, this kind of great shield that's going to protect me from all that nastiness? No. The comfort of God only comes into play in my efforts to break open my heart and make room for everybody. We don't hear that very often, you know, because we live in a world where we're all battered in one way or another. We want to hang on to any vestige of relief that we can come up with. But that's not where the love of God fits. The passage from Jeremiah makes it very clear. They will fight against you, but I'm going to make you an iron pillar and a bronze wall against the whole land. This is a Jew talking to other Jews, by the way. And that's where the love of God comes in, because the whole point of Jeremiah's mission was precisely his concern for his people. And so God, in that passage, we believe, is trying to tell Jeremiah that, yeah, opening yourself to everybody else and trying to get everybody else to really love everybody is going to cost you. Because we all want some sort of proprietary sense, as we see in the passage from Luke. Why do these people get so ticked off at Jesus so quickly? It's very interesting. One of our boys made it. We're number one. Jesus said, that's rubbish. Look at all those pagans that God was taking care of. You think you have some proprietary hold on me and on your own wonderfulness? Mm-hmm. No. I'm talking about the love of God, but it's that love precisely which Paul is directing us to. We are a participant in the love of God, and the love of God is universal, absolutely attentive. Universally attentive as well. And our love is only really divine or religious love insofar as it imitates that absolutely inclusive love of God. It's so hard, I think, to get hold of that. I mean, one of the great dangers, I think, in the church today is that we're circling the wagon. You have to get everybody under the big orthodoxy tent, you know. And then we'll get tooled up and then go do something. It doesn't work sequentially like that. It doesn't work sequentially. So, these are wonderful readings. And they are comforting readings. It's a comfort that's very different, I think, from the comfort that I would like to get most of the time. Oh, God, would you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? You know, that kind of comfort that Janis Joplin parodied so wonderfully. All this patience, kindness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is supposed to be a function of our readiness to be attentive to everybody. And maybe, finally, at least for me, the acid test of all that wonderful stuff that Paul's talking about. Because this is extraordinarily psychologically insightful, it seems to me. So that Paul could distinguish between what looks like love, giving all my money away, giving my body to be burned, but all that can be done lovelessly. That's extraordinary insight, I think. I can do it to show off. But the tough part comes when he says, it does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. God, how I love to see my enemies fall and fail. Oh, There are few pleasures in life so delicious as that. Tamaka. So the big finger. Come down. And then but then he says that the opposite to that is rejoices in the truth. And the truth shows up all kinds of places, even in some of the most unlikely. And that's what we're supposed to rejoice in. And to love, I think, is tested precisely by that sensitivity to the truth wherever it appears.